So, Alex Maskey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. Can you explain the role of committees up here at Stormont and how they relate to, I guess, executive departments and to the ministers and to the work of that happens down in the chamber?
Well, I think it's very timely that you ask that question because I don't think enough people fully understand the role of the committees and how important the committees actually should be and need to be. They are a very important part of the Good Friday Agreement institutional aspects, if you like, and they do reflect the various checks and balances that have been built into power sharing arrangements. So, for example, obviously we have a government here that was a political kind of compromise between everybody. The only way you can get government here back in the hands of local people here is to share the responsibility for that. And you would not have got agreement from ourselves, nor indeed the SDLP or any other nationalist or Republican, and hopefully any other progressive person. You would not have got agreement on setting up institutions here, particularly in the north, if you didn't have checks and balances built in. So, in other words, you have to share power. You have to share power on a proportionate basis. In other words, the mandate the people secure has to be sacrosanct, and therefore no question of majority rule. Now, obviously, you have to have a functioning government, so you have an executive here, and the executive, as I say, is made up of ministers from the various parties, proportionate to their party mandate as of the election. Then, of course, and they obviously have to take decisions, the key decisions around, the first and first, Deputy First Minister, for example, at around the Good Friday period, setting the budget programme for government. Those key decisions require maximum cross-community support. And that's obviously for very, very important reasons because clearly, the budget and the overall programme for government, these are the tools that the elected representatives have here to govern on behalf of everybody. So the principles and the fundamentals have got to be got right. But of course, there has to be a much more rigorous accountability system. And when people here talk about opposition and the parliament and no opposition here, in my opinion, that's an absolute nonsense. They simply don't know the system, and some of them choose not to understand the system.
So, do you think the committees are a kind of an opposition or a kind of a scrutiny function?
They are built in because, for example, in Westminster or that kind of a parliamentary system, you have the government of the day and you have the opposition. Both are part of the formal structure. So, in other words, they both have a statutory role. Here, we have an executive and we have a committee system, both which have their own statutory rules. So the committee system here is built on statute, and for very good reason, because obviously we don't have a majority, and for the purpose I made early on there, you cannot have a majority rule in this part of the world. It's just not on offer, and it just would not be a good thing to do. So therefore, you have to have communities working together on this, and some people call that mandatory coalition. I don't know any coalition which is really voluntary. Most people join coalition because they have to, and you can choose not to. Any party here is free to walk out executive if they so choose. I don't think it'd be a good thing that they did if they have the mandate to be in there, because that's about sharing the responsibility. So for me, the committee system, there are people here who know the architecture, or at least should know the architecture, and were involved in negotiating it, like, for example, SDLP, and also Unionist Party, both of whom were key negotiators at the time. They know exactly the role of the committees and the executive and so on, and the Assembly as a whole.
So to folk on the outside, what do the committees do kind of day in, day out? What's their kind of purpose?
The committee's formal and statutory obligation, and this is not just a wish, this is a statutory role that the committee has. The committee has the responsibility to scrutinise everything that the department and the minister does.
So not just legislation, but their plans, their budgets.
Their strategies, their proposals, their plans, their policies. We have a role of scrutinising all of that. And that has to be done as rigorously and as robustly as possible. So there's no hidden corners in the role of any department or of the work of any minister. Everything is up for scrutiny. And in my opinion, and you can see over the last number of years, some of those committees have been more effective than others. Sometimes you can get a chairperson, and sometimes you can get a minister who doesn't like the other or doesn't like the role of the other. And I'm not even going to say what parties that applies to, but if you look at the history of the Weymouth Assembly, sometimes ministers clash with committees, and sometimes committees want to use the committee against the minister. None of that, in my opinion, is appropriate, and none of it does a service to these institutions.
Can you think of examples in, I guess, years gone past where committees have worked well together as a team, as opposed to being kind of, how many are on the committee? There's about
11
or 12 or something.
Yeah.
You've kind of, because ideally they've got to work and cooperate with each other and kind of ask questions that work well together, as opposed to just being kind of 11 or 12 individuals who are.
Well, the committees, committees, sometimes you get a committee and it depends on the dynamic, and sometimes it depends on the member, sometimes it can be individual. And I think it's important that we all remember what is the role of the committee. You need to get back to basics in this place, in my view, and a lot of cases. Some of the committees work very, very well because they do their job of scrutiny very importantly. I take the view that there's not only scrutiny but also the policy, shaping of policy and so on. So I would never be simply, as a committee member, would never work on the basis that I'm just a passive scrutinizer. I want to be proactive. I want to look at the department's policies and proposals, proposed legislation. What do we need to do? Can we shape that? So therefore, early engagement with the departments is critically important. Early engagement with key stakeholders relevant to whatever issue you're dealing with is important, because you need to hear both sides. You need to take evidence. You need to engage. So if a committee doesn't engage, not only within the Assembly, but with other people out there, then they're actually, as I say, selling themselves short, and in my view, can't really do their job as well as they should.
So you're chair of the Social Development Committee. You've had some success recently around fuel poverty and things. You've made that a big kind of theme and issue over the last couple of months.
Well, the Social Development Committee, I would characterise it as having three major legs of the stool, so to speak, of issues. Benefits, welfare is one. Housing is the second one. And tackling disadvantage is the third. Now, there's lots of other things in between all of that. But if you take the kind of key functions of that department, it's about tackling disadvantaged regeneration. So it's everything from town centre regeneration and neighbourhood renewal. And within that, it has to have a whole series of strategies about tackling poverty and so on and so forth. Sorting out the built environment for people where they live. So there's multiple layers of all of these things. Same thing with housing. There's obviously provision of social housing, and there's got the housing executive. You've got the whole private rental sector. You've got the housing associations. Loads of issues around housing, a lot of issues around housing. And of course, then you have the whole welfare, and you've got the benefits system and all that. Most of it, in fact, all of it is really, it's only devolved to a point of administration, and really it works on the principle of parity. But there's a lot of tension around that, and equally there's a lot of focus of a lot of members, or at least a number of members who are saying, okay, you might be stuck in terms of parity, in terms of pounds, shillings and pence, or a particular benefit. But in the administration of a lot of that, there is obviously scope to do things differently and better. So one example, without holding you up, one example was in the last mandate, apparently, there was something around people had to present, like single mothers had to present themselves for job interviews and one thing and another. And this was like what was described as a parity measure because it was enacted in Britain. But it translated, because members were saying here, but it's all very well to say that in England, where local authorities have a statutory obligation to provide childcare in those circumstances, there is no such statutory provision here. So on that basis, even though it was presented to the Assembly here in the DSD Committee as an issue of parity, the members of the Assembly Committee, and they won this argument eventually with the Department and within the Assembly, well, it's not like for like, because there is no statutory support, no statutory provision for the single mothers, no circumstance, so therefore you cannot sanction them for not fulfilling this particular criteria. It's a modest change, but an important one nevertheless. But that was presented to the committee last year, may have been, or maybe a year or more ago, as an issue of parity. So it's done day, no discussion really about it. But in actual fact, when members delved in, they said, no, sorry, we can do something about that. So therefore, as far as I'm concerned, in this mandate, we are saying very clearly to the department, no, it may be parity, but let's look if it's not parity. And let's look, even within parity, what we can do to ameliorate if there are very negative consequences flowing from that measure. So we're not passively sitting saying, well, it's parity, so end of discussion. We're not taking that approach. We're saying, no, let's look at each thing as it comes in its own merit, and we'll deal with that. So let's have that discussion. So for us, as a committee, we have set a pattern. We want to look at the policy issues as they're early, so that we can have an input into them. We'll take evidence from whoever we think it's appropriate to take evidence, and people sometimes, more often than not, offer themselves to give evidence. We very willingly take that in engagement. One of the key things we did recently, and I thought this was an important step, you've mentioned the fuel poverty event. the Minister for Social Development is the lead minister within the executive on fuel poverty. And there was an interdepartmental working group established, and the minister chairs that. So I took the view this committee has been almost swamped by welfare reform related issues, benefit changes, social fund changes, and so on, since the start of this mandate. I'm very conscious that you could spend the next 4 years dealing almost exclusively, almost eclipsing other very important, equally important matters. And I've made it very clear to the committee, we cannot afford that. We have to and we will deal very robustly with the whole question of welfare reform and how that impacts on people here. But we also need to deal with the wider issues of housing and tackling disadvantage in all those forms. And I've made that very clear then in my discussions with the Minister no less than a week ago, that we need in the early new year, we need to then start to lift these other key issues up and give them the same attention that they require. In terms of fuel poverty, on the basis of the Minister, the lead minister and executive, well, I put it to the committee, well, then let's also be the lead committee within the Assembly. Because quite often I hear Assembly members saying the executive needs to do things joined up, and they're right, they are right, so is the Assembly. And there's been very little evidence over the years of committee cooperation and
so
collaboration.
You've got the committees together.
Well,
to
we
jointly listen to stakeholder groups.
I know that there have been occasions when two committees have met, for example, to discuss a particular issue, and that's been fine. And you know, I'm not going to second guess or criticise any of that because they've done it, and that's fine. But what we decided to do in the TSD, we took a lead, and I put it to the committee. Look, let's us, you know, demonstrate. You know, it's good enough to say the executive should join up, so it should. But let's us join up, because the issue of fuel poverty crosses actually translated into almost eight departments. So I got the eight committees together, eight departments, because, you know, even in terms of finance or like OFM, DFM, insofar as it has a coordinating role within the executive, even they have a role to play, even if it's in the coordination. They've appointed, you know, Nelson, because in this case is the lead minister on fuel poverty. Just using this as an example, I think it's a good example. So we maximised the collaboration this, and we got the eight departments to support this initiative. The eight assembly committees with all of the chairs, bar one who wasn't able to make it at the time, so there was no so that was fine. And we got all the relevant kind of stakeholders together. I was very conscious that we could be accused of having a talking shop. I was very accused, you know, I was very conscious that, you know, could this be maybe a bit unwieldy? But I thought, well, look, no, we'll have to put our money where our mouth is. We have to, the Minister has the responsibility within the Executive. I'm going to take the responsibility within the Assembly. So I was very pleased that with the work that we put in, we got eight departments, eight committees, and 30-odd organisations to the point, I think we had 90-something people in the one room and the one night, all working meetings, because we did this on the basis that we had a working table for each department.
So you kind of speak to it, right?
Well, we did. We actually said, because we really did, we just mirrored, we just matched the DSD committee chair or a key member, say, well, in my case, I chaired the DSD department table, and we brought the key stakeholders who we thought were most pertinent to that particular work. And then we had the DATE committee, and the chairperson of that, Alan McGuinness was the case, he chaired that particular table. So we had that department there, we had key stakeholders who were focused in on the issues relevant to that department, and so on, right through DARD, right through finance, and so on and so forth.
So if that hadn't happened, if the committees hadn't kind of got together, and would the department or the minister have done anything different? So did you shape it?
Well, we only had the first meeting, and we've been concerned that the interdepartmental working group has been established, but nobody out there would really know anything about it. And so we're saying, well, I'm not levelling a criticism at the minister for not having done anything yet, because he's not that long in office. But it is an important issue. He is the minister, so therefore our committee has a scrutiny role. And I'm determined, and I've said to the minister, I'd not be interested in fighting with you. I'm not interested in grabbing a headline, because any chair could do that, and some have done that. So I could grab a headline every week on some of this stuff and be, you know, dragging head to head with the minister. I'm not interested in it. I'm interested in getting something done. I want to sit back in 4 years' time and say, well, we did A, B, C, and D, and we did our job properly. So it's too early to say we've shaped the minister or any policy, but what we have done, we put a spotlight on each of the department's responsibility, and we'll hand that on a plate to the minister, because I'm a great believer saying, well, okay, I'm not going to sit around waiting until somebody else does something. I'm prepared to shoulder my part of the responsibility and then say, there you go, what am I saying about this? And therefore, I can set myself up to fail on this one, because people might say in 6 months' time, well, what did it all come to? So I'm conscious of that, but I'm prepared to take a risk, and I'm prepared to take a chance, and I'm taking the minister of good faith. The minister's going to chair the interdepartmental group, and I hope we have done some work to say, well, there you go, that's what needs to be done. But we will then bring that as a complete report. We'll bring that to the Assembly, so it'll be open to full public debate and full public scrutiny. That's the way I see of using the committee in a constructive way. So we, in a way, I'm saying, well, let's shape it, let's speed things up by putting attention on it. So that's what we will do.
How do you characterise the, I guess, the relationship between the committee and the minister? I mean, is it that he's, maybe you don't have to make it specific, but are ministers, if you like, scared of the committee, or are they, do they see the committee as a tool that can actually help reinforce, you know, you can gather a lot of evidence that is nearly independent of his department, so he gets a second, it's like a second view on things. I mean,
well, to be honest with you, best answer I can give you on that is, I mean, I'm going to keep us under very, very tight monitoring for myself, because the minister hasn't been to the committee that often, and the committee hasn't sought the minister to come that often yet, because we have been taking a substantial number of briefings from the senior department officials. And I mean, the most senior officials will come routinely to the committee without the bat of an eyelid. You know, as soon as they're asked to be there, they'll be there. And more often, they've been proactive saying that we would like to come and commit.
So the relationship with the department.
So the relationship is very good in terms of there's no question of anybody not wanting to come to the committee or anything else. But at the same token, I've thought that, and I've asked myself a question: do I detect? And I will ask myself this question every day. Will I detect, or do I detect any reluctance or economy with the truth, or withholding anything at an early stage from the committee? And if I do at any time consider there to be a problem, then I will jump all over it. I mean, and I've said to the minister very clearly on the department officials, when I took this mandate on, I went and met all of the head of all the sections of the DSD. And their agencies, and I made it very clear, I want the committee to do its job, and we will be very constructive, but we will also be very, very robust. So,
what would success look like, I guess, in a couple of years' time, or when we get to the end of this session? What would success look like for social development? What kind of things would you like? I mean, what would some of the measures be that you'd like to have in place to say Northern Ireland is a better place, you know, voters and citizens have a better
I would certainly like to see better statistics in relation to fuel poverty. I would like to see better statistics in relation to neighbourhood renewal. I'd like to see better statistics in terms of regeneration. I'd like to see overall poverty levels been lifted. It's not entirely the role of DSD, it's a very important one. So what I'd be doing is, first thing I have to do is I have to look at the programme for government and say, is your department's commitments in the programme for government being realised? So I want to be doing that on a focused way, on a timely basis as well, so as that we're not waiting until the end of term and say, oh dear, we didn't reach those targets. I want to know time by line by when. So in other words, when you look at the programme for government, and we'd be doing this early in January, we'd be looking at the programme for government commitments as it relates to DSD. First of all, we satisfy ourselves or not as to whether or not they're appropriate or enough or whatever, and we'll deal with that. But whatever the outcome of the programme for government is, then on the statutory basis, we'll be saying, fine, when's that been implemented? How will it work? When's it been done? Who's doing it? When are we getting our next report? I mean, I've already had notice from the department that they're supposed to come and brief us on something, say, by April, May, and I'm saying, no, I want it in January, February, because I want it earlier. I want to have an input in that on behalf of the committee. So success for me, obviously, would be if we're able to point out that what the department is responsible for doing has been done successfully. And I know that's a tall order because, the department's, not an island. But at the same token, as part of this notion of there has to be joined upness, there has to be more greater collaboration, I'm trying to lead by example, and I hope that recent effort on fuel poverty, which seemed to have gone down well with the other chairs of the other committees, actually could become a template for future work in the Assembly, and I think that would be important.
Is there a weakness of the committee system that, I mean, generally the chair is of, if you like, an opposing party to the minister, yeah. Tends to kind of work that way. But I mean, you have you've members on a committee that are of the same party as the minister.
Yeah.
Are there many examples where actually those party members will... Do they not tend to go easy on their minister? Is there not... Is it difficult to leave your party bags at the door?
I mean, there's always going to be a temptation, because in some committees over the years, if you notice, there are some members who, and from time to time, and there's been some few examples, but you can see where they've become quite personalised, where a chair of a committee was nearly using the committee against another party or another minister. So that's, I referred earlier on, there were some clashes in the past. And therefore, as I said, it does depend sometimes on the dynamics of a committee and membership. You can get strong individuals, you can get people who are solo runners, you can get that. So there is a danger of party members being easy on their own ministers, or being feeling they had to be defensive of their own ministers, which is why I keep saying to people, let's remind ourselves what we're here for. You know what I mean? I've said in my own party, and I didn't have to, but I said in my own party, well, this means scrutinising, and in this case it's a DUP minister. Yep. He's a partner in government. So, and I could say, you know, I've witnessed and worked with Nelson McCaws in the City Council. Was I impressed? No. But that's neither here nor there. He's a minister. He has a mandate. I have a chair of a committee, and we have a committee, and we will exercise our mandate. So we will question the minister. We'll give the minister the benefit, you know, until such times. And I've asked the minister likewise. I've said to the minister from the outset, when we met first of all, I said, look, whatever your view of a committee might be, or whatever experience you might have had before, leave it to one side. Treat this committee with respect it's entitled to. I'd expect you to be given the committee no early sight of your of thinking, likewise from your department. If needs be, you need to say that's on a confidential basis, and I would expect the committee to respect that, you know, as appropriate. Now, if at any time you then discover that your committee is actually, you know, deliberately undermining you or stroking you, well then, you know, I wouldn't blame you for making a call. I said, equally, I do not see myself here as just a confrontational chairperson. I've no intention of doing that. What I want to do is work with you. And I actually said to the minister, look, see, as far as I'm concerned, I look at your mandate and look at my mandate, even at the party level. But and the first thing I did was I got someone of my own party group and to take all the party, all the members around the table in the committee, take all our manifestos and look where they're all, you know,
what you'd have in common.
Were common. Yeah. And there's quite a wee bit on paper. So I said to the minister, my calculation just on the figure is, there's 80% that we should agree on, maybe 20% that we won't. I want to maximise the 80 and minimise the 20. We'll fight over the 20.
And he's happy with that.
But we want to cooperate on the 80. Because at the end of the day, I want to sit back on the four-year term, as I'm sure you do, and say, we achieved A, B, C, D, and E. Now, let's work on that basis. And I treat you at good value, at good face value. I expect you to do the same thing with me. And then, if that's the basis upon which we work, well, then hopefully we'll get somewhere constructively. You know, but at the end of the day, you might end up fighting over 80%. Who knows? Yeah. But I hope not.
I guess, last question, because I know you need to get away. But if the number of departments was to shrink, which seems quite likely that there's a head of steam for that, the number of committees would shrink, the amount of work for each committee could grow quite a lot as well. Could committees cope? I mean, you kind of meet, some committees are meeting nearly once a week or once every 2 weeks.
Well, the committees meet, as far as I'm concerned, the assembly scrutiny committees all meet weekly. And I think, and especially when then you're processing legislation, then you likely have to meet longer, maybe start moving into more like full days and stuff like that. So the fact of the matter is the committee would have to cope, but I mean, it would just have more and more time eating up. And, you know, the minute you see the Assembly is covering a lot of issues where if there's legislation going down, it might not necessarily. So there may be less time spent. Some of the stuff currently going through the Assembly, chamber time, which does take up a lot of time. But that would depend on the rate of legislation. If it's legislation, it does take up, because this is a legislative assembly. So at the end of the day, once the departments roll out the legislation. Some things don't need legislation, they need changed, but they don't always need legislation. But legislation does take time, it is time consuming, as of right. So if there were a reduced number of committees, then obviously those committees would have more work to do, but they'll just have to find the time to do it.
Thank you very much.